how do we improve our APIs? How do we make things simpler for customers? How do we make this a better product overall for the folks that we want to work with? That might mean that we expand into incremental customer bases. We start to think about how do we better serve other financial institutions that might actually want to take advantage of our payments rather than necessarily just kind of like non-banks. It's mostly just a lot of let's put our heads down. Let's figure out how we kind of continue to solve these problems because there continue to be a lot of problems out there.
Welcome to FinTech Confidential, bringing you the people, tech, and companies that change how you pay and get paid. Welcome to Accrued, the FinTech Confidential series presented by LoanPro. In this series, we're deconstructing the complexities of lending, exploring compliance, optimization, and modernization, personalization through insightful conversations with industry's best. I'm Ted Huff, and with my co-host Colton Pond, we're here to guide you through the intricate lending world. Whether you're deep into LendTech or just intrigued by how technology is reshaping lending, you're in the right place. Colton, welcome back, man.
Thanks. It's good to be here, Ted. I'm trying to have as many backgrounds in these episodes as possible. So new background again today, but it's good to see you.
In this episode, we're turning our attention to Column, a beacon of innovation in the fintech space. Born from visionary minds of William and Annie Hockey, before the husband and wife team joined forces, William gained his deep understanding of the fintech space from being a co-founder of Plaid and a former Bain consultant. Their journey took a pivotal turn when the strategic acquisition of NorCal Bank laid the groundwork for a bank designed for the digital age. Column shows what can happen when you blend the agility of fintech with the solidity of a traditional bank. It's created for developers and builders in the fintech arena, offering direct APIs to craft brand new financial products, and it sets up a fascinating discussion for today's episode. As we explore Column's journey and Brian Fishbein's critical role reveals how deep his finance background and innovation are reshaping the future of fintech banking. We will uncover how Column blends traditional banking's robust framework with groundbreaking innovation, and Brian's leadership in investing in treasury also emerges as a key force in rewriting the playbook for credit sponsorship technology. Colton, I did my best of introducing Brian, but I know you've got a personal relationship with him, so I'd love for you to kind of fill in some of the blanks before he gives us his falling into fintech story.
I mean, what's awesome about this is, so Brian, you are our first episode talking about banking as a service industry or credit sponsorship or banking sponsorship. And what a great place to start with Column on the innovation that y'all are doing. I hear nothing but amazing things on what you're personally doing at Column and with the broader team.
It's been super interesting. I mean, I've been doing this in some form or fashion for a little over a decade at this point, starting with kind of the traditional banking side where it was a lot of looking at, you know, post-origination, us buying loans, financing them, or doing securitizations for some of the larger scale programs, to then moving to a more investing seat where we would look at earlier stage companies and think about how do we want to invest in equity or actually acquire those companies. And that all kind of led to, you know, spending a lot of time thinking about credit and loan programs and how you kind of build and scale those in a way that really makes sense. And, you know, how do you access the ecosystem? Who do you want to be working with? What are kind of the best in class companies to be working with? And, you know, a lot of that experience indirectly kind of, and, you know, frankly, directly shaped how we think about things here at Column, right? When we start looking at new businesses and new lending products and how do we build these credit programs in a way that actually makes sense and is actually more aligned with the companies we want to work with rather than, you know, how banks.
Jumping right in, if we look at the sponsor banking industry or banking service industry, a lot has changed over the past year. I find it one of the most exciting times when things change because that's when you know real innovation is happening. Yeah. And so for those that are listening and in the audience today that aren't familiar, if you don't mind, give us a quick overview of the current sponsor banking industry and then how Column's approaching the problem different and unique, because y'all are truly, as Ted said in his intro, a bank built for developers, which generally you don't hear. Help us understand the industry and what you all are doing differently at Column.
Yeah, there's obviously been a lot going on. I want to rewind for a second, though, because I think it's super interesting to actually think about kind of the history of sponsor banking and how people think about it and, you know, what really is new and novel and different, right? Sponsor banking, you know, a lot of people think about was kind of a post GFC 2010 and onward type of thing that banks started to fall into as they look for other ways to drive revenue. But really, when you think about it, this goes back a lot farther. Genesis, and it's probably even earlier than this, but if you think about it, is kind of large corporates working with large financial institutions to acquire customers in a different way. And the very easy example of that is Citi, you know, had a relationship with American Airlines starting in 1984 to, you know, basically do sponsor banking. We just think about it differently. And the real difference here is you had massive scale because you had such meaningful operational needs and you didn't have all of this technology that the only people that could do it were the top five banks in the country and the, you know, Fortune 500. If you fast forward to kind of post 2010, what you saw with this proliferation was really more a function of better technology enabling people to do things when they didn't have that gigantic scale and actually access kind of the same sorts of distribution channels that you saw historically. And so you see that kind of evolution occur where it's not just credit cards anymore. You can start to think about offering term loans. But, you know, when we think about Column, and I'll get into this in a little bit, there's a lot of other traditional financial products that you can offer that folks have kind of focused on from a niche perspective. So if you think about like the Venmos of the world, right, that is, you know, payments, which was traditionally a thing that was offered by banks. And then kind of got disintermediated as companies like that started to gain more traction because they had a better experience and better technology. And so you've seen this kind of not just in credit, but across the board. And that has kind of carried through to today, where if you look over the course of the last couple of years, more and more banks have realized that the way to access their customer base and the way to actually broaden their business is not necessarily by saying we're going to stay within kind of our geographic footprint or our swim lane, but we're going to go more broadly and work with other folks who might have better distribution channels, might be better at marketing, might know how to reach customers in a way that we typically don't. Over the course of the last year, I think you've seen a lot more of the same, but the difference has been how people think about these partnerships and how people think about the risks related to them and how you actually manage them, right? Like part of the fallout from SVB and some of the others, I think about the impact on the sponsor banking industry has been, you know, really how do banks actually understand the activities that their end customers are doing? Are there liquidity risks or other things related to those businesses that people don't really understand? So I think that's been, you know, super interesting to see because it has brought a lot of stuff that, you know, when we think about what we built, and again, we could talk about it in a little bit, to the forefront in terms of how we actually manage these relationships and make sure that not only can we, you know, best serve our partners and our clients, but also make sure that we're doing it in a way that, you know, will keep us around for the long term.
As I hear you talk about the bank sponsorship or credit sponsorship side of the house, it really makes me think back. I mean, I've been in the industry for over 25 years, and I've helped multiple banks and fintechs go through the process of saying, what does it take for us to sponsor the fintech? What does it take for me to be sponsored by the bank as a fintech? And really helping them navigate through that white space that isn't very well called out. And it's really was really cool when I was doing the research on Column to see how you've simplified quite a bit of it. But it still has me wondering, like, how are you specifically looking to innovate in the credit and lending space? And what was that aha moment that led you guys to really start to focus on the credit sponsorship piece?
I think the reality is credit sponsorship is a core part of our business because when you think about traditional finance, right, lending products are a core part of any bank or lender or, you know, financial company and even a lot of non-financial companies. And so right from the jump when we acquired the bank, that was always kind of in the cards in terms of how we were thinking about that. The problem really became, you know, are we going to do it the same way that everybody else does it? Or are we going to try to bring our technology to bear to really kind of provide a better service and a better solution for folks? And so, you know, that goes back to kind of how we think about what our approach is and our differentiation is relative to others. It really comes down to three things, right? The technology is a core piece of it, and we've talked about that a little bit. But like, that is a driving factor in everything we do, both externally and internally facing, so that we can actually build these robust systems and serve our customers in the way that we want. So it's not just, oh, there's a really great API to originate a loan, but there's all of the stuff behind that that says, are we doing this from an appropriate risk perspective, from an appropriate compliance perspective? What else is actually happening behind the scenes to enable our customers to reconcile, to manage their LMSs, the loan pros of the world, in a way that doesn't break in a month when they try to do a reconciliation for kind of their internal finance and accounting. And the second thing, as we think about it, is really focused on these direct relationships that we want to have with our partners rather than necessarily working through kind of other vendors or other software. And that gets back to the technology, which is we built that for ourselves so that we don't need to rely on other people with things that we don't necessarily kind of fully understand when we want to originate these sorts of products. And then kind of to your third point, credit in a nutshell is great, and you can really be super successful. And we've seen that obviously with a lot of other banks in just that niche. But kind of where we think our value is to a lot of these companies is much more in the breadth of the offering, right? There are folks that only want to lend money, and that's great. And we think that we can serve those really well. But at the end of the day, I think what we've seen a lot of it, and we can talk about trends a little bit later, is folks that want to kind of broaden the customer relationship and broaden that customer wallet. And so what does that mean? Expanding into other loan products, expanding into other financial products like BDAs, offering money movement services, et cetera. And when you think about that, right, it's a holistic offering where we can say we can do loans, we can do payments, we can offer a deposit account that really starts to get people excited and really gets us excited when we think about what we're building.
Yeah. So I love lots of aspects of what you talked about, Brian, and what Column is doing. And I really view Column and the work that you're doing at Column is strategic moves in the banking sponsorship industry. Help us understand your view on how you see that experience then shaping what the future looks like and how that future of credit sponsorship and lending technology and marrying that with compliance, what does it look like moving forward?
I think a lot of it is really around how do we reduce a lot of the kind of manual operational compliance oversight requirements, right? The reality is like, originating a unsecured installment loan is not a super challenging process that requires a lot of innovation, right? The application process and the disbursement process is kind of what it is. And like anybody can do that. And I don't think that we would say there's like a ton of differentiation on literally that ability. Where I think you see the differentiation is really you can access our APIs to start doing things in real time. You're giving us all of the data that you would otherwise be collecting and might be batching and sending at the end of the month through an Excel file or through some other means in kind of real time, such that we can say, yep, we have created a loan account for this individual borrower that maps one-to-one with your internal systems, and we know that borrower is a good borrower, and we can disperse funds. And then you can start to say, okay, what do I build on top of it now that I have this kind of real-time insight, and what can I start doing with that? Well, if you just stop there, that's our loan origination business. We can kind of do credit sponsorship, and that's great. But then you can start saying, okay, we have a servicer. We've integrated with Column already. We have this kind of data model that maps to our own internal processes pretty cleanly. Well, when we start collecting money, we can start really allocating that at the account level without having a giant pooled servicing account. And then we can start saying, okay, incremental complexity on that. I have securitizations. I have loan buyers. I have other pockets of capital where those are the actual owners of those cash flows when I want to, you know, make sure that I am cleanly allocating funds to the right place. I can start doing that without having a person sitting in the middle to kind of do all of that work. And so that really addresses a lot of like operational concerns that frankly I've seen when you think about what do a lot of people spend their time doing, because it's really important to get those sorts of things right. But then you also start to see the other side, which is you have all this data that enables such a rich view of kind of the compliance and back end as well. That also lets you start saying, well, if there are trends that become emergent, you know, we start noticing that adverse action letters aren't being sent or something else, you're not seeing that 90 days later. You're seeing that kind of day one, hey, we saw these rejects, but we didn't see this other thing that was supposed to happen. Let's nip that in the bud before it becomes a real issue. And so the idea is, you know, mitigate a lot of the risks that you would otherwise need to mitigate through a lot of manual testing.
Yeah. Ted, we always come consistent things, right? Real-time data. We talked about it on the last episode with Matt Scroma on the importance of getting real-time data in a different context, but it's same themes of like, how do we get access to that real-time data?
Well, and then how do we use that data? How do we leverage that data comes up? And what I think is really unique with Column's approach, they're approaching it from a completely different direction than any of the guests we've talked to so far, because it's all about technology. It's all about the data. It's all about getting it and making it useful. I'd really like to understand, Brian, like, how are you guys using the technology and the technology partnerships to really reinvent the way credit programs and fintechs really support their customers?
It's a good question. It's a lot. It does come down to a lot of real-time data sharing and real-time kind of integrations across folks, right? I think when you start seeing batch processes or Excel file transfers or something else, you start to risk losing, you know, either urgency in kind of the process because you need to action on some piece of information more quickly than you might otherwise be able to, or data loss because you know there is a person on the other end that is processing it. When we think about it, you know, a really good example is, okay, you want to disperse loans to folks, you know, same day or in real time, right? There are certain limitations of the payment system, but once you kind of get past timing of if you want a loan at 11 p.m. at night, like, you know, it's going to be hard for you to get that wire. You can start to say, well, if I'm receiving an Excel file the next day for the originations that were approved yesterday, right, the soonest I can disperse is next day. Whereas if we're saying we are directly integrated with your application process, somebody walks in the door at 2 p.m., fills in all their information, and it all looks good, and they're approved for a $1,000 loan, there's no reason why at 2:05 we can't actually be initiating that disbursement. And so you start to think about, well, how do I create a better customer experience for folks? And it's through things like that, which, you know, again, come back to, we need to know and we need to get this information for us to be able to action on it. And so the question is, how do you actually kind of drive through that process? I think the second thing is around some of, you know, the credit and compliance aspects, which is, right, we have a program where we agree on kind of what are we going to originate, what does that box look like, et cetera. And it's very easy for you to say, okay, we need to run manual checks to confirm that all of this is actually working as appropriate. But a lot of this stuff is very quantitative, right? You can basically just set up rules in the background that say, like, this is the box that we're supposed to be operating in. These are the types of customers that we're going to accept, and very quickly screen and flag whether or not things are actually working as they're supposed to. If they're not, it enables you to quickly fix it versus end up in a situation where you say, oh, we've actually originated loans that we didn't necessarily think we wanted to, but because it was kind of a referral model, we're backwards looking to try to solve that problem rather than addressing it head on.
I love that. So along those lines, Brian, there's really three consistent themes in this podcast series that we've heard from folks. How do you drive optimization? And everyone right now is like, how do I drive greater margins? How do I drive profitability? How do I drive efficiency in what I do? If you were to mind, we'd love to understand how Column's approach as a sponsor bank with technology is helping the fintechs you partner with drive differentiation and increase optimization of their credit program.
Yeah. So I think we've talked a little bit about optimization. All of those things around data drive more operational efficiency. People can spend their time doing more interesting things. And so maybe I won't harp on that too much. Where I think there is a little bit more interesting differentiation really comes back to, well, if you've solved the technology aspect and we offer this really flexible product, right? From a technical perspective, there's no limit to what you can do with our offering, right? You can pair different financial products together to create something that, you know, provides more value to the user. You can offer both a credit card and a loan in the same platform and let everybody kind of understand and view that without necessarily needing multiple sponsor banks that don't necessarily talk to each other and might have reconciliation issues. And so you start to say, okay, if everything is technically possible from an engineering perspective, then how do we actually add that differentiation? And it comes back to, well, now we've got a lot of free time that our operations and compliance folks internally at the bank have, that they're not thinking about, okay, are we actually doing what we think we're doing, or how do we need to be testing and managing this because we have all of this automated alerting and data? And so then it's, okay, we talked about this very vanilla product. What do we want to add on top of it? What are the things that we think we can do differently? How can we get creative to actually meet the true customer need versus just saying, you know, we have this program, this is how we do credit sponsorship, and this is the box that we fit in. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Column from a differentiation perspective is we've really invested in the people and the relationships such that we don't necessarily say, this is the box that every single one of our customers and partners needs to operate within. It is, okay, you want to do something a little bit differently. You want to structure this loan product with, you know, these sorts of terms. Can we do that? Is that within the bounds of, you know, the regulatory framework? And if it is, then how do we do it? And I think that's different from, you know, what we've seen with other sponsor banks where, you know, you might be a commercial lender, but they also do consumer lending. And so you have to comply with all the consumer regs as well, because it's really easy to standardize, right? And I think that's just not the approach that we take when we think about these programs, because to your point, that then prevents them from differentiating from others in the market.
You talk about availability of data. You talk about the flexibility of the use, like all of these things, the hairs on the back of my neck start to stand up because I can only see, you know, your chief risk officer, your chief compliance officer just cringing a little bit every time you say it. But, you know, the story that's been talked about both in our previous episodes and in the industry in general has been how do we balance between innovation and compliance? I mean, just today we had a consent order go out on a financial institution, and they have two technology partners that are being massively impacted by it. And I would really like to understand, how does Column navigate this balance, especially with all of the regulatory things that go into between the commercial and the consumer that you just talked about?
Here's a quick message from the Accrued Series sponsor. As default rates continue to rise and margins compress in lending, financial organizations are searching for solutions to combine that operational efficiency with innovation. Look no further, as LoanPro allows lenders to enhance their origination, servicing, collections, and payments using the foundation of a modern lending core. Check out loanpro.io to learn more about how over 600 financial organizations have modernized their tech stack with LoanPro.
Yeah, it's a really great question. It's very topical, obviously. What I said about not just externally facing technology, but internally facing technology, right? And so we've developed a ton of things in-house that are like solely designed to help our risk and compliance teams understand what's going on. When you think about it relative to how some of the others have structured their programs in the space, right? We create these products that are meant to give us the level of insight that our risk and our compliance people would expect without creating such crazy obligations on our partners. And again, that's because we have these APIs that and data models that allow us to get that granular and really help our partners when we think about kind of what is the information that they're giving and what are they getting back from us, right? And so, you know, what's a really concrete example? If you think about some of the reconciliation issues that you might have seen in an FBO accounts, for example, where it's hard for the bank to figure out what the balances actually are. The way that we think about it is fundamentally different, which is it's not just a giant pot of money. It is a pot of money that is very specifically allocated to specific accounts where we will require within our data model to understand kind of what are all of the end customers that people are working with, even if they're not necessarily customers of the bank directly.
So as soon as you said pot of money, all I could think about was Lucky Charms. The rainbow and me pot of gold. Like, that's, for some reason, that's exactly where my brain went, but I'll let you finish it.
But it's kind of right. It's all, I mean, the marshmallows melt and dissolve and it all just like mixes together and you have no, I mean, not to take the analogy too far, but it's very hard to kind of disaggregate once you go down that path. And it has all these knock-on effects. When you think about like, what does pass-through insurance actually mean if you're a customer with an FBO account, right? If you hold more than $250,000, but you can't readily identify what whose funds those are at any given point in time, it's really hard to say, well, we think that we can actually insure these funds. And so when you like kind of get down to it, right, if you have a model where there is kind of this one-to-one mapping and reconciliation, you should never end up in a scenario where you're meaningfully off on a dollar balance. Or if you are, it's going to become apparent that day, not months later, where you can't really kind of like disaggregate and untangle everything that happened. What is the compliance and risk impact of that? You get much better and richer insights into what's going on, which means like there are going to be really, really good actors, or there might be some places where customers need more attention. And we can really focus on making sure that we're addressing those rather than necessarily saying, like, we have a checklist, we're just going to go through everybody because we don't know exactly who we need.
It's interesting you talk about the sub-ledgering and the importance of that and making sure that it's all in real time. There have been a number of clients that I've worked with when we went to talk to a bank about getting the sponsorship. We were able to bring them the technology, partnerships to show that sub-ledgering technology. But it's really nice to see that folks like Column are offering that as part of the service versus having to figure out, who do I partner with? Who do I build it with? How do I make sure it maintains compliance? There's a lot of different things that fall into that. But as you were talking about it, it's like, yeah, that is a really hard part of the job.
Yeah. And I mean, to bring it back to credit, right? If you think about kind of how loan servicers operate, or fund like models where there's just a pool of funds where you're just dispersing kind of out of that without really understanding, you know, necessarily, you know, what money is allocated to whom until later, right? You end up with this model where it does create room for those sorts of issues, right? Did like the $1,000 that was supposed to get paid to one investor actually go there, or did it go somewhere else? And when we think about it, this kind of more detailed tagging in our data model actually enables you to avoid those issues. Does it represent a shift from how some other folks might do it? Absolutely. But do we think that ultimately it better serves our clients as well as obviously, you know, ourselves from a risk management perspective? Absolutely. And, you know, again, eliminates that need down the line for a person to like spend their days untangling all this information, because it should already kind of prospectively work from a automated system.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head there, Brian, in that there's a lot of people that view innovation and compliance at odds with each other. One of the themes we've seen is they don't need to be at odds with each other.
Is that me?
They can, nope, they can balance. So help, if you were to speak to a skeptic, as someone that's a skeptic out there and like, I can't innovate because I need to drive compliance. What are some of the advice and insights you would give?
The reality is that, you know, maybe this is an unfair thing to say, but that statement is, you know, more a function of you needing to kind of put in more work in terms of what you want to do, right? The regulatory environment isn't actually as strict as everybody makes it out to be on some metrics, right? Like there are certain things that you always have to do, right? If you lend to a consumer, you have to give them a truth in lending statement. But like once you get beyond those requirements, it's more about, you know, we need to actually treat this customer fairly and appropriately while we offer them a financial product. And if like that's the philosophy with which you're offering, which is we have somebody out there who has a demand for this type of product and we think we can offer in a clear way, there's no reason why you can't innovate, right? And I think that's like the core of it, which is you might run into other people who say, I can't innovate because there is this checklist of several thousand things and the bank just won't let me do it. Maybe that is, you know, more of a limiting factor. I think that's what we try to shy away from when we think about kind of, this is not one size fits all. But, you know, we every day have conversations between our legal risk and compliance people talking to customers who say like, here's the way that I want to do it. Here's this tweak. Here's this thing that I think would be like super interesting and why we think our customers need it. And, you know, our response is always like, okay, like let's iterate on that. Let's figure out how we can actually do that the right way rather than, you know, we can't do it. And sometimes you actually say like, okay, somebody has an idea and like, we actually can't do that. Like that would be against the law. you can't get 100% hit rate. But I think the answer is the first answer from our team. And like, this is what we really try to ingrain with our culture and kind of how we've hired out is it's not no, it's like, how do we do that, right? Maybe this exact iteration doesn't work, but something close to it.
Well, and that comes into the yes, but type philosophy, right? Not a no because, but a yes, but philosophy. And, you know, for those fintechs that are listening to you, Brian, and looking at the website and seeing all these great technology offerings you guys have, and they're thinking, I love what Brian's saying, and I love what Column is offering, and I want them to be my sponsor bank. How important is it for them to combine the tech, their technology and the personalization, and but also at the same time, what's the likelihood of them having you become their sponsor bank?
I think it depends on exactly what they're trying to do. We work with a lot of people, and we are continuing to onboard people every single day. And there are very, very simple use cases, right? Where we have folks who might just want to open a bank account for their own personal use to use our APIs because they do high volumes of payments. And then there are extremely complex use cases. And I think, you know, when we think about kind of those complex use cases and the complexity of the product, right, the expectation set obviously scales as well. And so if you are, you know, a business that wants to offer a, you know, non-traditional lending product to subprime consumers, I think there's going to be, you know, a higher level of discussion and a higher level of scrutiny applied to how we think about entering into that sort of partnership relative to a very basic, you know, I want to pay my bills, right? But, you know, when we think about kind of like, what is our qualification and how do we think about our customer set? We work with companies that are, you know, on the smaller scale and are still kind of building out their product and building out, you know, their team. And then we work with, you know, very, very mature organizations that already know how they're supposed to do everything. And this is their, you know, fourth or fifth bank partner. But I mean, apart from kind of the usual suspects, which is like, we don't support crypto today, we don't support cannabis today, things like that, where I think you start to get into more regulatory considerations than necessarily like product considerations, right? In terms of what that business actually looks like. Everything that we put on our website are things that we do with customers, you know, every day.
It was fun going through and looking at it. I remember looking at Column long ago and then just seeing the distance that you guys have come, how far you've taken it so far. And there's been a lot that has changed since the inception of Column. And obviously, you can't keep doing the same thing and expecting the same better results. So I would love to understand, you know, from your perspective and the strategic direction of Column, what do you see as trends in lending and technology with fintechs and banks, and what they're going to need to prepare, not just for 2024, but for the years to come?
When we think about kind of the future, right, for us, it's a lot more of continuing to build out the technology that we've already started on. How do we improve our APIs? How do we make things simpler for customers? How do we make this a better product overall for the folks that we want to work with? And that's just going to be a continuous challenge for us to always be up-leveling ourselves. You know, that might mean that we expand into incremental customer bases. We start to think about, you know, how do we better serve other financial institutions that might actually want to take advantage of our payments rather than necessarily just kind of like non-banks. That's like, when we think about our internal roadmap, it's mostly just a lot of, let's put our heads down, let's figure out how we kind of continue to solve these problems, because there continue to be a lot of problems out there. We are by no means offering every single financial product that a traditional bank can offer yet. I think we've kind of just scratched the surface. But I think when you think about kind of the industry more broadly, right, there's two paths at this point, right? There are folks out there who have made their entire business credit sponsorship and these lending partnerships, and that's really great business. And you can look at their color boards and you can see how well they're doing by kind of just focusing on that. And I think that's going to continue, right? There's always going to be folks out there that say, like, this is our swim lane. We know what we're really good at, and we're going to continue to do that. And then I think what you're going to see is kind of the alternative, which is a recognition that there are businesses out there where lending is not their sole business, or having multiple bank partners is not actually the optimal path for them. And how do we actually start driving more of that consolidation where, you know, you're not working with seven bank partners, you're only working with a couple of cross products. The flip side of that, of course, is everyone kind of recognizes there's now a bunch of concentration risk in the industry. And so while you want your banks to offer multiple products, I think you're going to start seeing redundancy in the fact that there's two or three banks that do all of these things for these customers, because they're really going to be focused on, well, if one of them suddenly can't operate or needs to scale down, or, you know, God forbid, shuts down, how do we continue operating our business? And so that redundancy trend is then going to drive more competition, most likely, right? As you start to see other banks that can generate incremental earnings and generate incremental revenue streams, not necessarily by saying we're going to lean into this all the way, but we can start being one of a stable of banks and kind of managing our programs that way. It's going to be pretty interesting to watch as kind of the industry evolves. The you know, kind of thing in the background for all of this is, of course, the regulatory environment and how people are going to actually react to more banks getting into this space, what banks are going to leave, and what sort of consolidation that drives in terms of the business. Because I think, you know, at least what we've seen over the last year is the regulatory activity has certainly stepped up. And I think you're going to kind of continue to see that scrutiny regardless of, you know, what happens in the broader political ecosystem. The change at the OCC and the FDIC and the Fed doesn't necessarily happen overnight. And so it's been pretty clear the stance that, you know, folks have taken so far on these sorts of partnerships and what regulators expect from banks. But that doesn't necessarily mean that next year is going to be the same thing, or that, you know, it's not going to cause ripples in the ecosystem when the regulators tell, you know, their banks that they have to do things a certain way. You know, what does that mean for all the companies that currently work?
I love that. And Brian, several things you brought up there tie into what the future looks like. One of the things we love to do on these episodes is to take a step 3, 5, 10 years in the future, hop in like a DeLorean with Marty McFly. Let's go into the future and let's look at what sponsor banking looks like in 5 years. I would love your perspective on what it looks like and how it evolves and changes, and what those themes look like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the short answer is this is not going away. And I think it's unrealistic to think that's the case. The reality is, financial technology companies exist for a reason. They have clearly shown that, you know, they do a better job of serving certain customer segments than traditional banks, right? And you can kind of pick your niche or what have you, but you see this across the board. And I think, you know, as you think about kind of the banking space more broadly, traditional banking in kind of the branch in your hometown, that's probably not going away either. There's always going to be a cohort of the population that actually, you know, wants to continue to engage that way. But I think you're going to see a larger percentage of the population that is growing towards a more tech native, higher expectation set for what services should look like when they engage with their financial institutions, similar to what you've seen with other sorts of software, right? And so I think what you're going to end up seeing is that the space only gets bigger and only starts to kind of continue to take market share from what you might think of as traditional banks, which is going to continue to drive, you know, the interest from banking institutions in serving these sorts of customers, rather than necessarily saying we're going to stick to our tried and true strategy. And so ultimately, I think what you're going to need to see is some sort of shift from a technology perspective for banks to catch up, so that not necessarily they can serve, you know, end customers, but so that they can serve these folks that are distributing financial products and services in the way that these customers actually want. And so I think that's going to be, you know, super interesting to see over the course of the next 5 years. But I think the flip side of it, which is, you know, what we've seen today, is the very, very niche businesses that say we're only going to focus on XYZ customer segment. Those are going to start to consolidate, right? It's very hard to say we're going to run a single product lender that doesn't do anything else and think that it's going to exist.
Focus over on people that love cats, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. And don't get me wrong, that product could still be valuable and that customer segment could still be valuable, but I don't think that is like the end all be all in terms of how you can run a business, just because the reality is the financial system is so large, and really, in order to have viable businesses, you do have to operate at some level of scale, right? And so I think you see there's going to be more folks who say, you know, we have these three different kind of customer segments or business lines. You know, what else do we need to add, and who else out there can we add it to, or, you know, sell to, in order to actually kind of make this all make sense at a corporate level, even if the unit economics are good.
So, Brian, before we close up for the day, I've been blown away by how you guys are at Column looking at not only the sponsorship, but the technology and the compliance. I mean, there's so many things that you guys have pulled together. Do you have a closing statement for us? You want to make sure the audience hears that maybe we didn't touch on that you're like, I just got to tell them this.
We've talked about a lot, but I think the closing statement is really, you know, we are out here to serve kind of the financial community writ large and try to provide the best technology out there to enable folks to grow their own businesses and to support them, right? Our long-term success and the way that we think about our business is totally predicated on being able to serve this customer set rather than necessarily, you know, the traditional banking that you might see from others. And so, you know, really just want to hammer home the point that that's kind of all we're focused on building and doing out there.
Well, Brian, I want to thank you for taking the time out to sit down with us to answer the questions and really participate in this discussion.
Yeah. Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Brian, thanks for coming. The future is exciting, Ted. Like, buckle up, giddy up, let's go. Big things are coming. I'm excited in the role I sit at, looking at what's upcoming, especially in the sponsor making space.
You know, the big things that I took away from today's conversation really are data is a gold mine, compliance is not an option, and the last but not least, the way that banking has always been done can't continue to be done that way. And those are the three things that I took away from today's discussion.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what I want to do is thank you, everybody, that has made it this far into the episode. We will continue to invite more industry leaders to have discussions like this, to really dive in to what the world of LendTech is throughout this entire series. And if you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to fintechconfidential.com/access to get email notifications of every episode that we release. If you haven't already, also subscribe to us on YouTube and on your favorite podcast player. And last but not least, share with your friends and colleagues so that they can keep up with what's going on as well. As we wrap up today's episode, I've got one last thing for you. If you're in the trenches fighting fraud and financial crime, you know it's a complex battlefield. That's where Hawk's AI tools for real-time payment screening, AML, transaction monitoring, and dynamic customer risk rating come into play. These aren't just buzzwords. They're game changers designed to make your compliance more effective and less of a headache. Imagine slashing through false positives with precision and giving your compliance strategy the edge it needs. Head on over to gethawkai.com to sign up for a demo and discover how their platform can revolutionize how you fight fraud and financial crime.
This has been a production of DD3 Media with all rights reserved. This is provided for informational purposes only. It is not offered or intended to be used as legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. We strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, but will not be responsible for any missing facts or inaccurate information. You comply and understand that you should use any of this information at your own risk. Cryptocurrencies are highly volatile financial assets, so research and make your own financial decisions.